speaker, somebody from my area, I'm going to give you mic.
Before I start, I'm going to let y'all know right now I cuss. Why? Straight. First, I'd like to thank God for doing for me what I couldn't do for myself, and that's changed me at my own permission. I'd like to thank the CPRCNA 23 for allowing me to come and share my experience, strength, and hope. Well, there's a lot of y'all in here today. But this is beautiful, man. I'm just getting nervous, man.
Shake it off.
I got a home group. It's called Keep Coming Back. We meet every Tuesday at 7:30. I have a service position there. I'm the greeter. I get a chance to hug everybody who comes through to meet. So at this time, give me some help, man, and just hug the person next to him, man. Welcome to the meeting. Not the option, no. Because somebody didn't get a hug today. Because when I came here, I ain't want y'all to touch me. I ain't want nobody to hug me. I was real angry. And I definitely wouldn't let no man hug me. But it's a good day to be clean. You know, my topic is forget coming back, never leave. And when I got, you know, when I got this commitment, you know, I thought about, you know, the topic. And, you know, I can kind of like share on other topics, you know, like illness and recovery, you know, open-mindedness and willingness, you know. But this particular topic, I couldn't find it in the literature. And if somebody has, give it to me after the meeting. This is a prestigious opportunity, you know. Sharing the podium with Joan, my predecessor, being allowed to set the tone. I just hope I don't mess up and let me get to the end of the road. My bottom, I was living in the garage, sleeping in an abandoned car. I was taking a shower with water hoses, relieving myself in trash cans, eating out of trash cans. Feeling, you know, that I couldn't accept who I was and what my life had turned out to be. And in that process of me living in that garage, I was an unhappy addict, you know. I mean, it didn't start off like the end. Some people say they got unhappy at the end, but, you know, when I started using, I was unhappy when I started using. And I'm just telling my story, you know, because the way I came up, getting high wasn't the way that we operated in our business. And But I made a decision, you know, to do that first one. I already knew what was going to happen. I knew I was going to be a bum. I knew that my family was going to abandon me. I knew I was going to abandon my family. But I took that first one, right? Because I couldn't accept the fact how my life had turned out. I couldn't accept the fact that I had caught the HIV virus and I didn't know how to deal with it. You know, I couldn't accept the fact that how I thought people might look at me, you know, and wonder, you know what I mean, how I acquired this virus, or look at my family. The time I got this virus, man, you know, they were saying people was going to live like 5 years. And I was afraid because I had grew up, you know, man, portraying an image. And when I got this disease, you know, I became real afraid, you know, and because I thought I was fearless. I thought I had a lot of courage, a lot of heart growing up. I was always the first one to do something, you know. But I found out in this program, man, that I had a lot of fear. And I kind of like operated out of fear, self-centered fear. My topic, Forget Coming Back, Never Leave, I've been through a whole lot in over these last 10 years of my recovery. And I've required a story inside of Narcotics Anonymous. And I believe that's why the board gave me this topic. Because I need to talk about the behavior, you know, despite my behavior, despite the losses, I kept coming back. My daughter. I kept coming back. I didn't use. Even though, you know, I spit up on y'all meetings, I spit up on God. But y'all told me, man, just keep coming. And I ain't even give a fuck, man, you know, about nobody in this program, man. You know, my primary purpose ever since I've been here, man, is that, man, I don't want to go back to the garage. I don't know if nobody else been in the garage. I'm talking about that little place, man, that's inside, that you always feel like you're locked and loaded, and no one has the key but God, but you're too scared to ask God to help you. Because I feel that I didn't believe enough in God that I can come into this program and get this recovery. But I came anyway. Y'all told me to take a risk. Despite of what people said about me, despite of how people looked at me, you know, I took a risk. Even people didn't understand, you know, man, about this virus, and I had to kind of endure what people had to say about me. Even though I had to endure, man, going through relationship after relationships, man, thinking that, man, people didn't want me, man, because I had this virus. But truth to be known, man, it just wasn't my turn. I know now that God has continued to prepare me for the next one. I'm married today. But that still, that addict in me still shows up, y'all. I need to talk about obsession and compulsion, and it talks about one is never enough, and a thousand is never too many. And what I'm talking about, man, you know, it doesn't matter if I want to feel good. I'm obsessed with feeling good, and I find out I'm obsessed with feeling bad. So my disease really don't know the difference. All it is just want more. So sometimes I can just sit still and just be, you know, satisfied of feeling good. And then tomorrow, man, I'm comfortable feeling bad, you know, and I want some more. So I kind of like go out and put myself in those positions. I heard somebody talk about last night, man, going out and picking up hoes. And I don't want to classify my sisters as hoes, man, but so that means like going out picking up other suffering acts. Then again, let me bring it right home. How about picking up newcomers? With 10 years clean. Not willing to get honest, you know, I get honest when opportunity persists me to get what I want when I want. Because sometimes I can come into a room and call myself stripping, but there is a motive for me stripping. And a lot of times, the motive started out to get free. And I also know that the primary purpose is for me to be free, but I find out, man, that I still had that manipulated behavior. I have shared many times about my behavior, and as soon as I walked out the meeting, my disease showed up. Nine times out of 10, I react to my disease. I just ain't smoking no crack. The disease of addiction is so awesome, man. You know, I'm glad that they say that it sticks with you 24 hours a day. But Narcotics Anonymous say if you come to meetings, get a sponsor, that you can keep that disease arrested. I came, I got a sponsor, he gave me some direction, stuff like sit until the meeting is over and pray like we prayed you up in here. Don't leave. Even though you might not hear what you want to hear, but stay and work on some patience and tolerance. Don't leave 5 minutes before the miracle. Those were the things that they was telling me when I came. But y'all also told me, man, that I don't have no business, you know. And what I share, you know what I mean, a lot of times, it's not even about trying to help nobody in here. It's about me trying to help me. The newcomer is the most important person in the meeting. But I am the most important person in my life. So I got to share, man, to try to get free, man, sometimes every second of the day. I mean, I know nobody's in here probably as sick as me, but I got to share, man, to get free about what I do on a daily basis. Narcotics Anonymous suggested some things to get to that process, and that's doing some step work. And I struggled doing step work. I didn't want to do a four step. But I did it anyway. Because I'm petty. And I'm always looking for a benefit. And I've seen enough evidence in here to at least have enough hope that if it worked for same, it'll work for me. Because Sammy was the guy who told me, man, that I need to go confront the women in Narcotics Anonymous and tell them, man, that I slept with them unprotected and I had the virus. He's the one that told me, man, if you come clean, Mike, right, that it's a good possibility, man, that you can get some help and you ain't got to worry about, you know what I mean, you know, you as your secrets being as dark, because you as sick as your secrets. But for me, I'm always looking for a benefit. But he also told me is that, man, once you come clean about the virus, you're going to have all the pussy you want in Narcotics Anonymous. So I got honest. Now I'm only talking about me. You know, it's good, man. You know, I feel good. Because I ain't got nothing to worry about, man, because everything I talk about is what I do. And what you see is what you get. So I ain't got to worry about, man, thinking about some shit, man, that I told y'all, man, to try to remember any lies, you know what I mean? Because it ain't nothing. I'm a petty, crackhead dog who manipulate to get what he want, when he want, when he want it. Thank God for Narcotics Anonymous. Because I fit right in here. I've benefited by taking some suggestions. You know, I got married again. I was able to, you know me, become a homeowner. You know what I mean? Went back to school. You know, I'm actually doing homework while I'm down here on the convention.
Oh, that's right.
You know, that's only because of y'all, you know, and how y'all have structured my life. You know, even though, you know, Narcotics Anonymous come first in my life and God, but I also got to look at people who I'm committed to, and that's my family. You know, even though, you know, with my behavior, you know what I mean, outside of my marriage and all that other crazy shit that I do, man, every day in the morning I get down, man, on my knees and I ask God, man, to restore me, man. I'm talking about, I learned, man, the only way, man, for that prayer to manifest itself, man, at first I have to go to a spirit before it comes to the natural. I'm talking about God is going to give it to me, man, not when I want it, but he's going to give it to me, man, when I need it. That's why I never left this program. Because as soon as I get to the point that I want to leave, he reveals it to me. I don't know if I helped anybody. She just gave me my 5 minutes. I wrote a whole lot of shit down on this paper. I ain't even get a chance to talk about, right? Lost dreams are awakening, brothers and sisters, in this program. Today I'm working on my PhD. Talking about a crackhead dog who come out of a garage who slept in a bandit car.
That's how it works.
Hopefully in the next year y'all be addressing me as Dr. Williams. Yeah. That's only God. My name is Addy for Life, man. Thanks for letting me share.
My name is Letty, blessed to get for recovery. And again, I want to thank Mike for sharing and setting the stage. And for my next speaker, it's also a friend of mine. I give y'all Jones. I'm coming right back at you.
I'm an addict named Joan.
Hey, Joan.
And it's a good day to be clean.
Come on, Joan.
I guess my emotions is my area never let me down. Unbelievable. This is the only place that I know that you can be yourself, good, bad, or indifferent, and people love you anyway. My clean date is September the 18th, 1985. And I'd just like to tell you that I am just as excited about recovery today as I was 23 years ago. When I found out that an addict, any addict, can stop using, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live. I was sitting in a place where I was told, you know, go there or go to jail. So I say, I'll go there. Not to go to jail. Everything in me said I was only there not to go to jail. Although the evidence was clear that my life was unmanageable. I was 30 years old. I had nothing to show for being an adult. I had great parents growing up. Mom, dad, with 7 children. We had a nice house to live in, church on Sunday. School was a requirement, summer vacation, 3 meals or more a day. Come in by the light. So, you know, and I know that we're more liked than different in the rooms. If I base my upbringing on whether or not I should have ended up in the attic, I'd say no. But we all know disease don't care who you are, where you come from. It's out to destroy. So, I left home around about the age of 18, 19, because, you know, I was going out to the go-go. You know, if you from D.C., you know the go-go is where it's at. You know. I was listening to Chuck. And my mom was like, come in by 12. I said, shit, Chuck don't come on to 12. I mean, I had no understanding about what she was talking about. I mean, she had no clue who Chuck was. She wasn't give a damn being here by 12. And I think that's where, you know, my transition started. Because growing up, I can't remember any bad times. When I did my fourth step, my my younger years was just very good. Wasn't until I started making decisions for myself. You know, that things got kind of chaotic. And so I left home. I'm moving. Shit, I need to see Chuck. I'm gone. I'll talk to you later, you know, and my first attraction was the lifestyle. You know, I was attracted to hustlers, so that got me long before the drug got me, the uses of drugs, you know. I saw this guy, he walked right, talked right, and I said, that's it right there, you know, and I set out to conquer and get. You know, and so I believe that that's when things started to go downhill. And I started to use, you know, substances that when at the end of the road, I was the addict that woke up every day having to have something to change my mood. I was the addict that was getting set out on the street at the end. I was the addict that was doing a belly crawl on the floor and steal my mom and my dad's money. I was the addict that left my son at my mom's house without her permission. Took him there and told her I'll be back shortly. And I never made it back. I was the addict that carried a baby for 9 months, got no prenatal care. When my water broke, I was in a pool room. Went to the hospital, had the baby. My disease said, leave it there. You know, you got one child you don't have. Where you going with that? So, you know, disease was more powerful than me. And so I left that kid there, and I mean, I have not seen that kid since. And so by the time I ended up, I went to jail as a result of, you know, distribution. And I didn't know I was an addict then, the first time around, when I went to jail. And when I was in that jail, I never heard of NA. They had Bible study, GED preparation, knitting class, and but I didn't hear NA. And I'm sure it was there. But it passed me by. So, of course, after getting out after 30 days, I went back to what was familiar. I hadn't been diagnosed an addict yet. So I went back to what was familiar. Although everything in me said, you know, I'm going to do this, but I ain't going to do that. But we all know one thing leads right back to what you like, everything. And so about 6 months later, I ended up committing the same crime. And they say sometimes, you know, your higher power is working long before you know it. If you play your tape back in the Works How and Why, it's a piece in there that talks about what was your moment of clarity when you came face to face with your disease and you no longer could deny the state that your life was in as a result of drugs. What was your moment of clarity? Now, I had plenty of moments of clarity. You know, when I got set out, that should have said, you know what, I got a problem. Or when I left the son at my mom's house and didn't go back for months, I got a problem. Or when I left the baby at the hospital, I got a problem. Or when I rolled with the man that had no legs. I rolled in a car with a man that had no legs and he was driving. You know, he would operate the car with a stick. You know. And he got so good, he had to look down. He just was rolling. You know, we never could understand why did he let anybody drive that had legs. The bottom line is because he had the money, he had the drugs, so whatever he wanted to do was fine with me. Until one day he missed the break. So as a result, you know, of him not having no legs, he went right up under the dash. So, you know, I got out the car, called the ambulance. They showed up. They wouldn't know who's driving the car. I said, he's in the car. So when they got over to the car, and they looked in the car, and they were in disbelief. They were telling the other people from the fire department, come over here. They just couldn't believe it. So, only thing I can tell you is that the next day we rolled with the same man. And so it was stuff like that that should have told me it's a problem. But it wasn't until, you know, that judge said go to treatment or go to jail. And so I went in there and I was introduced to Narcotics Anonymous by way of D.C. area H&I subcommittee. Charles W., Bernice Ill, Money, Bill, brought the meeting up. The first thing attracted me when they came down the steps to bring the meeting was the aroma of perfume and cologne. Because I hadn't smelt that fragrance in a while. You know. So they say, whatever gets you here. You know, might be a fat butt and a smile. I don't know. You know, so they came down and we said the message was hope and the promise is freedom that any addict can stop using. My antennas went up. You know, where they not using that? I hadn't been around people that wasn't using in years. I didn't have a need for them. And so they say, try Narcotics Anonymous. You know, and so I started going to meetings while in that place. And I've been here ever since. And I believe that I surrendered from the heart early in my recovery. I had a burning in me that when I found out that I had to use that junk, and then when people were sharing their experience, strength, and hope, and some of the devastations that they had gone through and did not find it necessary to use, that motivated me to say, damn, if they can do it, I know I can. So I think, you know, my process started. Like 4 months into my recovery, I was in that place, got a phone call, said my brother had been shot and killed. Okay? I said, all right. So they say, being that you're on paper, you can't go to the burial ground because it's in Quantico, which in D.C., that's like right down the damn street. But because it's a cross line, they said, I can't go. So in my head, I'm like, okay. Because by this time, I'm trying to tell you that I had begun to surrender from the heart. They said, when you surrender from the heart, most likely you'll never use again. You'll never use again. So when they said I couldn't go, I said, whatever. Do what you got to do. Because at that point, I understood that my leaving to go see him get buried wasn't going to bring him back. So I begin to become a realist. I begin to deal with what is real. You know, take all the illusions and the, you know, false beliefs and my myths out of me. You know, and so went to the funeral, came back, and they let my girlfriend come in my room at that place. Normally don't let anybody come in your room at that place. But some reason, I think my higher power said, you need to see her. Because we came from the street together. If I didn't know anybody else's story, I knew hers. And they let her come to my room. When I turned around, it was Frances W. I said, damn, what you doing here? She said she had been clean for a month. One more time, affirm that I'm done. Because I understood, eventually, to use is to lose. Now, this is to take nothing away from anybody that has. I'm just telling you my story. And if you made it back from a use, wonderful. Wonderful. You know, so started going to meetings, obtained the sponsor. Eventually, I understood that I was responsible for my own recovery, that I had to participate in my own recovery. In order for me to get to the part that talks about having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, that we tried to carry the message to addicts and practice these principles in all our affairs, is that I had to do the work. Now, let me tell you, the work didn't come overnight. Came over time. Because I know we're more like the different. When I first got here, all I wanted to do was gain some weight, get my little hair done, get my nails done, you know, get me a Blockbuster's card. You know, get me a little account. So then we go out to eat after the meeting. I can say, let me stop at the machine and get me a few dollars, please. You know, give me a little NA symbol around my neck, a little gold piece, you know. And I thought that equaled recovery. So I had to play that game for a while. To understand that, you know, those things never equal recovery. That the recovery came as a result of the work that you do. See, when I sponsor women, I sponsor them the way they let me sponsor them. I don't give you no expectations or limitations. You know, if I'm a sponsor, you got to call me 30 days. No, call me when you want. If you call me a year from now and say, hey, sponsor, I'm going to say hi. How you doing? I'm not going to say where you been, why you calling me, how you doing? You understand? And so as time go on and I'm in this process, you know, life just starts to show up. You know, 10 years later, my twin sister died. You know, and these are things that's happening that I just cannot see in my recovery. I wish that when you came in, they give you a crystal ball to say, this is what's going to happen. Doesn't work that way. So that's why they say, strap up, strap down, get ready. You got to build a foundation so when things come, you won't crumble. Okay? Talks about, forget coming back, never leave. Now, explain to me, because people do it. Some people here right now haven't been here since last year. Haven't been to a meeting since last year. Like the speaker talked about last night, they just do drive-by meetings. And see, as of today, some people don't like me right now because I keep coming back. You can't stop me. Because I understand that. Why would I get this gift and not stay to give it back to somebody else? Why would I keep what God gave me and not sponsor another woman when I know what her outcome would be if she stays? Now tell me, every situation that I've had in my recovery, and they have supported me to the utmost. That's why I'm so overwhelmed that people love me and I've transitioned here. I have not always been like this, clean. I was the addict here clean for years that people didn't want to be bothered with because I thought that if it wasn't rough, it wasn't right. So I didn't have the ability to show compassion. You know, I wanted to give it to you like I got it when I came in, not understanding that shit has changed, that you got to be more loving and caring. Because by the time people get here, they're looking for love or you giving love. You know, I had to change the idea that, you know, this is who I am. No, this is not who I am. I had to change the idea that, you know, if it wasn't my way, it was the highway. I had to be more open, more understanding of somebody else's process. The steps helped me to become entirely ready. Because for years I operated off those same old tired defects of character. You know, resentful, angry, jealous, envy, a gossip, judgmental at the top of the list. Being judgmental is the worst defect you can have. Because what happens is that you judge people not know really what they're going through or where they come from. Forgetting my own process. Forgetting my own process. You know what I'm saying? So here I am in this program, and I understand that, you know, I cannot participate in this program if I'm not coming. I had to change sponsors because my sponsors stopped going to meetings. That's right. The pamphlet says a sponsor is someone that's actively involved. That's going to meetings and participating in their recovery. You know, so I stay here because, you know, this is the best thing happening for an addict. Share a story with you. The 20th, which is Monday, is the day that my brother died. He was at the convention the prior week. He wasn't feeling good, you know, but he, like me, he'll go get him. And, he died the following week as a result of cardiovascular disease. And I had never planned a funeral before. My mom is 90 years old. She was 89 at the time. And it was my turn to be the leader. So I went with some help from the members in Narcotics Anonymous. Walked me through the situation. Went to the funeral home. For some reason, the policies that my mom had on us for years and years diminished instead of increased. And my brother was a very, very giving person. Wow. Very giving. And anybody know him knows it. People love me unconditionally. Went to the funeral home, $500 the policies equal to. Now, I'm just telling you my experience with people, you know, just showing up. I didn't call anybody. I just started trying to figure out, you know, how we going to lay my brother to rest. You know? Only thing I can tell you is that from Monday to Wednesday, when a couple of people walked in my mom's house and they put $16,000 in my hand, I would like to tell you that it came from my mom's church. I would like to tell you that it came from the government. I would like to tell you it came from a bank loan. But I'm going to tell you it came from Narcotics Anonymous. And I'm not saying that's everybody's experience that go through this in here. I'm just telling you how they showed up for Joan, because Joan show up for people. My brother got laid to rest with zero balance. Showed up at my mom's house. My mom's been a member of a church since I've been born, and I'm 54. But I'm going to tell you who showed up at my mom's house first and foremost. Narcotics Anonymous. When I got to the hospital, they said my brother had died. Well, they said he went to the hospital. When I got to the hospital, it was about 40 members. Not from the church. From Narcotics Anonymous. They're waiting for me to shelter me from the storm. Why I don't leave? You really want to know? Why I don't leave? Our 12th step simply states that we have to freely give back what was given to us. You can't do that from home. You can't do that from a cell phone. You're gonna have to come. You're gonna have to come. The second step is the step that is a recommitment step. Because they say in the works how and why, after years of clean time, life can seem meaningless. You find yourself moving away from sanity instead of towards it. They say you can recommit yourself at any time. Now, why would I be here 23 years and not sponsor anybody? What the hell is that about? The only way that I could sponsor someone is that I had to do the work. You know, you have to incorporate the 12 steps in your life. You can't sponsor somebody if you haven't done those things. Because it's not about, you know, taking you shopping and taking you out to eat and, you know, things of that nature. It's about getting busy, about changing your life. And the changing of my life happened over time. Now, I would like to tell you that I started getting better right away. No, it took some years. Years. For me to soften my spirit. For me to show more compassion. To hug someone and feel it. you know, for years I would get this, you know, I'm not going to talk to Jones, she, not me, you know. But you know what? It was real. My presentation, my body language, my facial expression, things like that, you know, would back people up off me. You know, being in this program and feel like you're alone is not a good thing. So I had to do something. I had to ask God to help me take my will in my life, guide me in my recovery, show me how to live, let me be more loving and caring so that people will feel that they can come to me. And you know what? Y'all tell me there's something different about me. You tell me. And I appreciate it. You know, I can take this opportunity to say that over the years, if I've harmed anybody by my presentation, by my facial expression, I humbly tell you I'm sorry. I humbly tell you that. So, if you're here and you haven't been here in a while, I say welcome.
Thank you.
I say welcome. I say get back to the business of carrying our message. Get back to the business of going to a meeting. I take care of my 90-year-old mother, and guess what? I make a meeting. I get my butt in a meeting. And I sit down and I listen. Most times I share because someone called me. Most of the time I just sit down and exhale. Take something for this addict. Because I have not recovered. I am recovery. I will not have recovered until I die. And I understand the man that's in the book for Narcotics Anonymous, Ron, Bob, God bless you. Bless you for setting the path, for staying here to carry the torch. Because that's what I'm doing, carrying the torch, passing it on to someone else. I encourage you, no matter what, keep coming back. I'm an addict named Joan. Thanks for having me.